Hello, this is John Swoffel with TwinsTrivia.com, and today we have the pleasure of speaking with former Twins pitcher Dick Woodson. Dick pitched for the Minnesota Twins from 1969 through 1974 before being traded to the New York Yankees. Dick was the first player in Major League history to go through the salary arbitration process, and today we're going to talk to him about that. One of the items in the collective bargaining agreement that was signed in February of 1973 allowed for something called salary arbitration. And the Minnesota Twins were involved in salary arbitration early on. As a matter of fact, today's guest, Twins pitcher Dick Woodson, was the first player to ever go through that process. So thank you, Dick, so much for joining us today to talk a little bit about this.
You're welcome.
So, Dick, what led up to you going through the salary arbitration process?
Well, John, it actually started back for me, 1970. And that may sound odd, but in 69, in my first year with the Twins, I was a 7-5, but I was a major contributor from the pitching staff for the Twins, and we won our division and went on and then got swept by the Orioles. The next year, in 69, I made the minimum of $10,000. So next year, I was looking at whatever reasonable offer would be for my salary. And through the collective bargaining in 1970, the minimum salary was going to be $12,000.
Okay.
Well, guess what I was offered? $12,000.
Mm-hmm.
And when I went up to them, Griffith and Fox at the time, I said, I don't understand. You're just offering me minimum salary. Oh, no, that's a $2,000 increase. I said, no, because anybody coming up from minor leagues will be making the same thing I did, and they didn't even contribute last year. And their response was, it's not something I'll ever forget. You either sign the contract or go carry a lunch bucket.
Wow.
So that started, that whole thing started with that response and treating me that way, started a very, well, I should say even before then, a very traumatic experience in every year trying to negotiate. Because there was no negotiating, quite frankly. The reason why arbitration came about was because of, and only because of, Calvin Griffith. And it wasn't just the way he treated me, it was the way he treated all of his players, including the superstars, compared to other ball clubs and how they treated their players. They all made more money than we did.
Wow.
But even before then, John, Calvin Griffith, for whatever reason, I don't know if he didn't like me personally or if he didn't like the way I pitched or what it was, but in 1968, when I was at Charlotte, Billy Martin, who was with the Denver Bears at the time, tried to bring me up, he said, numerous times, and was stopped by Calvin Griffith. And then Billy, at the end of the season, finally brought me up. That year, Billy wanted to bring me to the Major League Winter Ball, and Calvin Griffith fought him on that, and Billy finally won that argument. In spring training of 69, Calvin didn't even want to put me on the Major League roster, and Billy fought for me there. Then when I went to spring training, the word I was getting that, you know, there was no way that Calvin Griffith was going to allow me to play Major League Baseball, and I was going to go back down to the Denver Bears. Billy Martin fought for me and took me to the big leagues. So Billy Martin has been a mentor for me for whatever reason. And he fought Calvin Griffith tooth and nail to get my start in the major leagues, and I will, you know, forever be beholden to Billy for that attitude and giving me that chance, and hopefully I had over the course of my big league career proven him, you know, as a correct way of going. So there has been a problem with Griffith and I for an awful long time.
But you never knew what the cause of it was to begin with?
No.
Wow, that's interesting.
All I knew was is that, and this is not something Griffin told me, this is something that Billy Martin told me personally, and I never confronted Griffin because I said, well, I mean, how was I going to confront an owner
sure.
of a major league ball club? So, again, you know, when you say it's been a long journey to finally get to 1974.
Okay. Well, why were you picked to go through the process first?
Well, it's an interesting question. I was going through, I found an old letter that came from who was it? Oh, from Marvin Miller. And it was to a Mr. John J. Garin, G-A-H-E-R-I-N, in New York. And what it was how they were going to reimburse us for at least half of the cost expense. You know, I had to fly from San Diego to Chicago, which was fairly expensive. And so each club had was responsible for paying one half of that trip.
Okay.
Now, here are the players, and it's not long, but it's an interesting question when you ask me that question. From Oakland was Reggie Jackson, Ken Holtzman, Darryl Knowles. From New York Yankees was Duke Sims, Bill Sudeikis, Wayne Granger. Minnesota was Woodson, Larry Heisel, Steve Braun. From Chicago White Sox was Stan Bonson. From Atlanta was Norm Miller, Darrell Evans, and Marty Perez. And Baltimore was Bobby Grich, Paul Blair, Dave McNally. From Kansas City was Cookie Rojas. And from San Diego, Clarence Gaston. Now, people may not know those names, but those were heavy hitter names back then.
They were.
And so the reason why I was picked out of all those names was because I was the poster child of the most abused in Major League Baseball as far as contract negotiations.
Okay.
So that's how that came about, unfortunately. I say that because I've had to relive this for year after year after year. Because if I came in, if I was the second guy or the third guy, nobody would ever talk to me about this. So it's a dubious honor, to say the most.
Yeah, it's kind of an interesting position to be put in, for sure. Well, what, you know, going into that arbitration hearing, what were you asking for, and what was the club offering?
Well, let's put it this way. First off, I got a phone call from Marvin Miller saying that he was going to lead off the arbitration with me.
Okay.
And I said, well, how does this work? And he says, well, you submit a number that you think would be appropriate. The ball club submits a number they think would be appropriate. Then you go and you have an arbitrator decide which of you is correct. That was it. That's all I was told.
Well, did the players' union assist you in any way in the process?
No, what they had offered, because I said, well, I don't even know what figure to ask for, and they said, well, if you want a representative, we can get you a representative. And I said, well, would that be a cost to me? And they said, yes. And I said, well, I can't afford that. Mm-hmm. I live, you know, I barely make it through the winter for what we earned back then. And I can't, you know, I mean, if we're looking at 10-15%, I really can't afford to give that up. I said, can you give me some ground rules of how it's going to go about determining that? And they really didn't give me any. So I picked a figure. So I picked a figure, and I said I had made, I think, $18,000 in 73. I think that's what it was. It might have been $15,000. And I decided that $30,000 was a nice round figure. Now, how did I pick that figure? I felt that basically, when I'm saying $15,000, that doubling my salary would be more than a fair figure than what the Twins had. You know, again, this was based on a lot on 1972 that I, you know, I got. Remember, I went from $10,000 through 1973 season to $18,000.
Okay.
So again, going to $30,000, I thought that was more than just. Unfortunately, what I didn't know until I got into arbitration was that they based it on the National League pitchers who had basically the same amount of years, innings pitched, and so forth with the different statistics. And the four or five pitchers that they rattled off in that meeting, that they had already made in the $50,000 to $60,000 range without going to arbitration, and most of their stats were not as good as mine.
Mm.
And I mean, I was shocked, quite frankly. And first off, I had no idea that they were. I always thought they were going to compare me to the American League, and the pitching in the American League was really, really good at that time. So I didn't know if I could really live up to maybe what those guys, you know, were making. But I didn't have any idea what money's, you know, as a player, you really don't know what money's back then, what anybody's making.
And that
now it's public knowledge. Everybody knows.
Yeah, I was going to ask you, did the players talk amongst themselves and compare salaries?
No, not at all. And it would be extremely nosy and rude to ever go up to anybody, unless it was publicly put in the newspaper. But again, my salary, my arbitration figure has been all over the place as far as what I made. It was only $30,000, but I've seen anywhere from $28,000, $29,000. And I said, where did they get those figures? I mean, it's I have the contract still, and it says $30,000 on it. But no, we would never, ever. I wouldn't anyway. Go up to somebody and say, you know, what do you make? It just wasn't done back then.
Why the comparison to the National League?
I don't know. I'm not quite sure why they did that. It made me want to go to the National League because they seem to get paid better over there than the American League, or at least, let me put it this way, me. So I'm not quite sure why they did that. There obviously was a reason for that comparing us to the American League. So,
outside of you talking with the Players Union, did you do anything else to prepare for the hearing process?
No, because there wasn't. I didn't have anything to prepare except for reviewing my stats, which I had taken with me. And based on my stats, I felt comfortable that I was worth what I was asking for. And obviously, I underestimated a lot. And Harry Platt, our arbitrator, even asked me as the final question before we adjourned. He says, "I don't understand, Woodson." He says, "Why did you ask for so little?" And that told me right away I won, number one. But number two, you know, it's one of those backhanded wins. You know, great, I won, but boy, did I leave a lot on the table unknowingly. So I wasn't very happy. A lot of other guys were, because when the word got out about how this really went down, there were a lot of guys that I heard went back and revised their figures before they submitted them.
Certainly makes sense. What was the actual process of going through the arbitration like? I mean, did you make your case first, and then the Twins did theirs? How did that all that work?
Well, yeah, it was 47 years ago or something like that. I'm trying to remember. I'm not sure if I went first. Who was representative on the Twin side was Clark Griffin. Calvin wouldn't even show up, you know, to face me man to man over this, which says a lot about his character as far as I'm concerned. they said I was a 500 pitcher on a 500 team, and which was true, but I was also, you know, like 7th or 8th in the league in ERA at a 14-14 record, and I was right on up there with all the big boys. And then he said, well, you know, then he went on after that and said, you know, this the gas, you know, 1974 is when the first gas crisis hit. And he said, well, people will never come in to see him pitch anyway, and we might have you know, trouble getting people in to watch our games. That basically was his argument.
Yeah, it's,
so, and that's, you know, that's Clark Griffith, though. I mean, he. Why I think that's why he got replaced eventually, because he didn't know how to negotiate. So they lost a lot of negotiations in arbitration for several years.
Yeah, they did.
Yeah, that's the reason why.
Looking over the history, well, that very first year, Heisel, Braun, and yourself all won.
Yeah. Well, you know, and Griffith had come out in a TV interview that said he would not pay us a dime, that we weren't worth that any all three of us weren't worth the amount of money. And he said, I have in here that he said, you know, that $15,000 that I lost, I will get it back. And the one thing he had said was that he'll never pay me. That money, even though he did have to pay from April until through May, whenever I got traded.
Mm-hmm.
And even the Players Association called him in on that, because that's a big no-no back then.
Yeah,
that's what he said. But it was funny, they kept coming back and saying that I wasn't worth anything in 74, that my arm was bad, and that I wasn't that good a pitcher. But then you'll see quotes in here that I'm in this top 10 pitchers in the organization, and he expects big things out of me. And then I looked at some of the games that I pitched after that, and I pitched extremely well. So Calvin had a lot of problems with the truth back then. whether he was saying it just to be saying it, or what his agenda was, I'm not sure. But it always put you at odds with him because he always came out and was putting you down all the time.
Well, Calvin was old school, and you know, it was kind of top down. You know, it was his way or you were moving on type of thing, I guess.
Well, yeah, when they tell you that, you know, you either sign a contract, you're going to carry a lunch bucket, I think that says it all.
Yeah, it certainly does. When that process was completed, did you find out right then and there that you had won, or was that something that you had to wait on an answer to?
I went back home to San Diego, and then I had to report in... in 5 days, and three of those days I was traveling with my family back to Florida, and they never had anything in the paper in the San Diego Union, so I didn't know that I won until I got to spring training, and then I was bombarded by reporters asking me how I felt, and about some of the nasty quotes that Griffith was making, and how did I feel about that. You know, and that was the first day I walked out on the field. So, not quite the way you wanted to start your spring training, but
for sure.
That's what I found out.
Wow, and no official notification. That's just the way you find out.
Yeah, because they sent a mailgram to my home on 216, but I was already in Orlando.
Okay.
So I never knew it until somebody, I'm not sure who said it. I don't know if it was Julie's parents or who got it to us, but by then I already knew.
Yeah. And, you know, the Calvin was obviously, you know, saying that he wasn't going to pay you in one way or another, and then eventually he ended up trading you to the Yankees.
Yes. That's the only way if I hadn't done that, if I would have had accepted his figure, or I hadn't even, didn't negotiate it, didn't have the arbitration available to me, I might have made $22,000. I always question that because he may not have offered me that much money just through negotiation. And I probably would have still stayed a Twin because I didn't give him the heartache or maybe the embarrassment of taking him to arbitration.
I see. You know, and then there's some rumor that's still floating around out there on the internet and so forth that you had stated that you felt that you were blackballed from baseball.
I thought when I got sent down, because first off they didn't pitch me very often there. I just sat in the bullpen and end up I'd have to pitch on the sidelines and things like that. And then they sent me out, and I'm going, I don't understand why you're sending me out. And then on top of that, John, not only did they send me out, I went to Syracuse, and I did very well in Syracuse. I threw some really good games down there and won some games. When our season was over at Syracuse, they brought me back up. You know, I mean, I still look at that. I still think that that was a reason. I don't think that was Bill Burton's reason. I think I still in my heart of hearts think that was all part of that is to teach me a lesson.
And it was held against you. And
yeah, I think being the first guy and starting it all off, it was like it was my fault that the arbitration started. And I just happen to be a guy they picked. So.
That's.
But anyway, I mean, I'm looking at I'm looking at the quote on there, and when Burton sent me out, and it, just one of those things. So.
Yeah. So now that all these years have passed, the whole arbitration process, what are your thoughts on it now?
Well, I guess overall, it's just like unions in general, is that when they first start out, it's a very good reason why they start out. And then I think it gets to a point that I'm not sure if it's not detrimental to the game itself. Because the amount of money that they're choosing from say $7 million and $5 million, a guy who in his lifetime of 11 years never made what they're making today in a rookie's salary, which was what, over $400,000,
sure.
And I made $10,000. I have a hard time relating to those figures. I don't begrudge anybody because somebody's got to be willing to pay you that amount. But when you're arbitrating over figures like that, it's I have a difficult time understanding that.
And I think all fans do.
It's going to get worse if they do where the players are basically entertainers. They're going to want a percentage of that profit just like actors and actresses do. And so if these astronomical TV revenues are up there that they're handing out one point whatever billion dollars to pay the clubs even before they sell season tickets or they have concessions or whatever they're going to want some of that too. So, and I'm going, well, where does this stop? How much money do you really need? A guy gets $26 million a year. I have a hard time with that. It's still a game of baseball. And the game hasn't changed that 74 mil?
Somewhere in there. I think it was the Red Sox first baseman.
Oh yeah, yeah, Gonzalez. He's a hell of a player, but that's a lot of money.
It is. It is.
And so, you know, it's hard for me to answer that because I am a fan now, and I look at that and I'm going, you know, as long as somebody's willing to pay you that, you're worth it. But I mean, how much money do you really need?
Especially
when you look at my background, I started out in 65 for $500 a month for 5 months. I played 65, 66, and 67 at that rate. In 68, I got a whopping $250 raise because I went to AA. And then I hit the lottery. I went in 69, I was a rookie, and I made $10,000.
Yeah.
And that was a lot of money for my wife and I.
Yeah. Well,
so guys probably in the minor leagues probably make $30,000 or more easily.
Oh, I'm sure.
So in my 11 years, I didn't come close to what a rookie gets this year. So we play basically for the love of the game.
Yeah.
And we're willing to, and our wives and family, we're willing to put up with that. To help you achieve that dream. And I was just very fortunate that I had somebody like Billy Martin who believed in me and also myself of working very, very hard at improving every year to making it to big leagues and making it long enough to get a pension. So I've been very blessed.
Yes. Well, Dick, I thank you very much for spending your time with us today and talking about salary arbitration. It's really an interesting subject, and it's really changed the game of baseball.
Yes, it has. I have a difficult time of looking at stats of guys who are they get X amount of dollars through a contract, negotiated contract, or arbitration, and I look at their stats and I'm going, you know. What they're making compared to what I made is it's just so difficult for me to